Family of Trucks. I'm back, everybody. Jake Uger, Ozzie DeLon, John Irola with you guys. I was in Canada for 10 days. I have a lot of observations about Canada that I will share in the post game with the members. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member.
You survived. That's impressive. I hear there's a lot of bears there.
There is. Well, there's. Let me just tease two quick things right up front about it. I'll tell you more about it, like I said, in the post game. One is I have found the inner sanctum of white people. Okay, and I will explain what that is. Furthermore, I have figured out why Steve Bannon would despise Canada. Okay.
Really?
Yes.
Those can't both refer to Canada, both of those things.
In a sense. Okay. So that's coming up in the post game. I know that's a long tease away. It's about 2 hours away, but all the members get that whenever they like, because you can download the whole show in the post game. Okay, and now the second thing I'll tease real quickly as a matter of promotion is that there's only 2 weeks left before our journalism drive is over, completely over. Okay, we're ending it on the first 100 days of Trump, so we need to panic. Look, I'm going to tell you more about it in the second segment here, and we do have a cool new shirt coming up. So that's coming up in a little bit, but I need you to panic right now. TYTnetwork.com/go. We need to get to 2 million. I got to be honest with you. I don't know if we're going to make it because we're not that close with about 2 weeks to go. We're thinking about 1.66. Yeah, 1.662. But can I see 1.7 soon?
And bear in mind, anything can happen if we reach this. I mean, you guys funded, for example, just one person, Nomi. Young Turk now was already doing great work. Young Turk now. Now it's announced that she's on the DNC's Unity Reform Commission, which means that a Young Turk is in the house.
She's okay. In the building. She's in the house. Okay. So, as far as the show is concerned, we've got a live shooting in Facebook, it appears.
We do.
We have united with more controversy and drama. We have, this is all in the second hour, we have executions that were stayed. But there's controversy surrounding them. And then we've got fisticuffs between liberals and conservatives in Berkeley while somebody's trying to sell vegetables in the middle. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite part of the story. That is awesome. Don't miss that. That's awesome. It's so Berkeley to have a farmer's market in the middle of a riot. Anyway, okay, so that's all in the second hour. In this hour, are we going to go to war? That is an important question, to say the least. Turkey, now... some unfortunate results in an election there, or were they actual results? But you know what? I've got mixed thoughts on that. Drama.
Really?
Drama, I will explain.
Really?
Really, okay. Okay. We'll see. Okay. And then Alex Jones' lawyer admits that he is a fraud.
A phony.
What do they call him?
It's a performance artist.
He's a performance artist.
Which I was pretty sure every conservative despises.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He does interpretive political commentary.
Later, they will claim he's a mime.
Oh, God. Oh, if he was a mime.
That would be excellent. Okay. Anyways, but we start with super serious stuff.
We do. Well, not super, super serious, but a little bit of a tour of news from around the country. Some quick hits for you. This Tuesday is a special election for Georgia's 6th congressional district, where Democrat John Ossoff is currently polling at number one. This is with 17 total candidates. He is likely to win this first round, but unless he wins at least 50% of the vote, there will be a second round, which becomes a little bit harder for him. That's happening tomorrow, so maybe go vote there, especially considering that this is Tom Price's seat. And formerly represented by Newt Gingrich. This would be a huge win for the Democrats if they were able to flip this seat. Maybe you can help to make that happen.
Let me just say it real quickly on that race. Number one, it is a lot more likely than you might think, given that it was Newt Gingrich's and Tom Price's seat. Because Mitt Romney won it by a wide margin, but Trump only won it by 1 point.
Yeah.
So it is up for play here, and that would send a huge signal. And like I like to say, if you're in Georgia and you're in that district and you don't go to vote, then don't show up at any protests, don't use any hashtags, don't tell me you're resisting if you didn't go out and vote.
Exactly. No hashtags from you. Anyway, you still have a chance. It's going to happen tomorrow. Secondly, this weekend saw a number of tax marches in cities across the country, drawing thousands of people, including myself and others of the Young Turks at the LA one. Many Americans are extremely concerned about what it is that Donald Trump is hiding in his taxes, why he refuses continually to release them, even though he said that he would, and all of this controversy is there. Despite all of that, he tweeted this the following morning. Two tweets. I did what was an almost an impossible thing to do for a Republican, easily won the Electoral College, even though his was the 46th best Electoral College win out of slightly more than 50. Now tax returns are brought up again. Now they continue to be brought up. And someone should look into who paid for the small organized rallies yesterday. The election is over, but the concerns about corruption and transparency continue. I do want us to look into who paid for these, though, because I went, my girlfriend went, and we so far haven't gotten our checks. So what the hell's going on? Come on, lib billionaires.
The reason Donald Trump asked that is because it is projection. If you remember his first ever press conference where he announced that he was running for president, we found out later that he paid actors $50 mm-hmm. a head to show up because he didn't have any real supporters. Now look, to be fair to him, he did win the election. But that is not a carte blanche to do anything you like and have any kind of corruption you like. More than 60% of Americans, including a huge percentage of Republicans, actually want to see your taxes. Because it's not about, hey, ha ha, he he, I won, you lost. It's about, hey, we want to make sure you're serving all of us and not yourself.
Exactly. And slightly different news, sad news. On Saturday of this weekend, Emma Moreno died in Italy. She was 117 years old. And in addition to that, she was believed to be the last surviving person to be born in the 19th century. Incredibly impressive life that she lived, very interesting. I read her background. Specifically, she credited her long life to a diet of 3 eggs per day, 2 of them raw, 1 of them fried. And she has unfortunately passed away, but very interesting life.
Of course, I will relate.
19th century.
Yeah, that's amazing. Of course, I will relate all of this back to me. Number one, I eat eggs all the time. I feel great about this news.
Raw eggs?
No, but a lot of sunny side up.
Okay.
And number two, my grandfather was born in 1901. That is how old I am.
Wow.
And furthermore, Stephen Miller, who is one of the top advisors of the president, I read an article today, but I still can't quite believe it because I'm so stunned by it, is 31 years old. Jared Kushner is 37 years old. Ivanka Trump is 36 years old, all over a decade younger than me. Mm-hmm. And they're now running the country.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Random facts
cause
about
for
age.
Concern. And
yes.
Then some of those, other than Stephen Miller, might be the more reasonable people in the room. They just don't know what the hell they're doing, and they're in charge of some of the most important issues in the country. With that, why don't we transition to the biggest foreign policy story of the day. Thankfully, over the weekend, we avoided going into nuclear war with North Korea. Let's keep that up. But despite that, tensions do continue to rise, especially with some of the statements coming out of the Trump administration, although we have updates as well. First, we want to show you Vice President Pence was at the DMZ speaking about the issue, and here is what he had to say about the current situation with North Korea.
I'm here to express the resolve of the people of the United States and the President of the United States to achieve that objective through peaceable means, through negotiations, but all options are on the table. The era of strategic patience is over. The President and I have great confidence that China will properly deal with North Korea. But as President Trump made clear just a few short days ago, if China is unable to deal with North Korea, the United States and our allies will.
So this is an enormously serious story, and I'm going to have enormously serious commentary in a second. Mm-hmm. But and what I'm about to say is unacceptable. So you have that to look forward to. But in the half a second when that first video started, and I saw the Korean guy on the black beret surrounding Pence, I thought, oh no, they have him.
He was kidnapped at the DMZ.
No, it's of course with the South Koreans he was standing
with. Yes, thankfully they're different people, Cenk. Jeez. Okay, now he also said there, by the way, that all options are on the table. Last week we broke down why any military conflict, nuclear or otherwise, with North Korea would be an absolute disaster. They're still considering that possibility. But we also have H.R. McMaster, the guy that took over for the disgraced Mike Flynn when he was forced to flee D.C. And he's going to sort of modulate that rhetoric just a little bit. Let's watch.
The president has made clear that he will not accept the United States and its allies and partners in the region being under threat from this hostile regime with nuclear weapons. And I think what you saw last week with the president's decisive response to the Assad regime's mass murder of innocent people, including children, with chemical weapons, that this national security team is capable of rapidly responding to those sorts of crises or incidents and events and providing the president with options. And our president is clearly comfortable making tough decisions and responding.
But the military option still on the table?
Oh, all options are on the table.
A few moments later.
This problem is coming to a head. And so it's time for us to undertake all actions we can, short of a military option, to try to resolve this peacefully.
So maybe military is on the table, maybe it's not, depending on which particular portion of any interview you listen to. But the general consensus is that there was a plan, supposedly, that if they tested a nuclear weapon over the past few days, we would have attacked them. Thankfully, that didn't happen. They did not, in fact, test a nuclear weapon. Instead, they tested yet another ballistic missile. Now, this did not go well. They've had a lot of failures of ballistic missiles. This one might have been particularly embarrassing. Let's watch. There were high hopes, but it didn't work out. Now, some people think that US cyber hackers might be the reason that so many of their missiles don't quite work. I blame the Roadrunner in that particular case, but the US might be a factor.
Well, they were very proud of this missile, now we're not joking, called the Musaldan. Mm-hmm. And lately it has not been working very well. That video is not that far off. 88% of the tests with the Musaldan missile have failed. And in the past, they had worked, believe it or not. So look, Ben Magwitz and I have been skeptical about North Korea being able to do anything effectively militarily for a long, long time. Literally now decades that we've been on the air on the Young Turks, because they can't make the toilets flush. On the other hand, their missiles do launch fairly regularly, hence they are bought in the open market in the world, which is disconcerting for a number of reasons. But lately they have not, and people think that's because of our cyber warfare, which would be an excellent use of our cyber warfare. Usually it is directed against American citizens, and we're totally against it. But if it's directed against madmen's missiles, perfect, that's exactly what cyber warfare could be used for.
I mean, if they were to conclusively show that it was us that did it, that theoretically could spark a conflict in the same way that a physical attack could.
I'd say
it's less likely, but it is still possible.
I really want us to be able to make sure that their missiles don't work.
I do too.
So I would roll the dice on that. Now, speaking of which, let's break down what makes sense here from the Trump administration and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. So let me start with the things that don't make sense. And I will circle back to that as well at the end. First, when McMaster and Pence talked tough about how we showed the world, and Pence talked about the world witnessed the strength and resolve of our new president with bombings in Syria and Afghanistan. We bomb Syria and Afghanistan all the time. We just happened to bomb the Assad government, and we barely dented it. We purposely left their airfield pristine so the Russians could keep using it. So this whole idea of like, we showed them, is so stupid. Yeah. Like, oh, we'll show the North Koreans too. No, you won't. You won't show them anything. These missiles that they paraded around that John talked about the other day, they're buried deep in the mountains of North Korea. You're not like, look, we're going to get some of them, and maybe a lot of them will not launch. Hopefully, we did our cyber warfare right, etc. But you aren't going to get all of them. And this bravado and tough talk is stupid and senseless and doesn't get you anything. Okay, so that's point one. Point two is when Mike Pence says the era of strategic patience is over. That's also disconcerting. So look, I want you to do things that get us to a conclusion, because I do, this North Korean madman and this regime being around for now 64 years. His grandfather was a murderous, insane dictator. His father was, he is, okay? And it's been hanging over the world's head for all this time. Yeah. And the reason we're more concerned is now we're worried that I saw a number out there that North Korea could actually maybe get a long-range missile that reaches America in 2026. Now, that's still a long way away, but hey, you don't want to take any chances. Besides which, the thing that people don't talk about, which drives me crazy, is they could reach South Korea today.
Yeah.
So killing millions of people.
And Japan.
Yeah. And I actually care about the South Koreans. It's not like, oh, if they reach Seattle, then it's a big deal. If they don't, it's not a big deal. No, it's a giant deal right now, and it has been for a long time.
Yeah. And a little follow up. So people, I got a little bit of a pushback from my claims last week that they don't currently have any capacity to reach even the west coast of the US, especially with a nuclear weapon. And some people said, well, they have submarines. And they do, but you have to actually look at the submarines they have. Submarines are not the same as submarines. And so I've looked at them. They have a couple of submarines that can arguably fire some kind of missile. But the vast majority of their submarines are incredibly small things. These are not large nuclear powered submarines of the same sort that the US has. And we also have submarine defense in our Navy. So just understand that simply because they have submarines doesn't mean they have submarines like we do that can fire tridents and all that.
Yeah, look, the downside of their capabilities that they are trying to expand is they're now working on long range missiles. They're also working on a hydrogen bomb, which would be 1,000 times more powerful than Hiroshima. That is deeply troubling, okay? Yeah. Now, they haven't gotten to either one of those yet, so we don't have to panic and launch tomorrow. But if you live on the west coast of the United States, you begin to understand the concerns that Korea and Japan, and South Korea and Japan have had for a long, long time. And so I think that I like that we're beginning to try to resolve this, which we should have done a long time ago. But with Trump in charge, I'm a little worried about how we're going to resolve it. But let me give you more some good news. So they talked about redoubling the efforts when it comes to diplomatic and economic pressure. Okay, good. That's the direction that you should go in. Any kind of launch is almost by definition going to be a complete disaster because it's going to kill at a bare minimum thousands, tens of thousands, and perhaps up to millions of South Koreans, let alone North Koreans, let alone Japanese. Okay, so when you talk about diplomatic and economic pressure, well, it's a little mixed bag. Sanctions don't work very well in countries led by dictators. Because you just can't squeeze hard enough to get the caviar out of the dictator's hands. And he doesn't care. He murders his own people anyway. He's got gulag on top of gulag. They didn't work in Iraq. They are not going to work in North Korea. They haven't worked in North Korea in the past. But diplomatic pressure could, because they really do need the Chinese. Mm-hmm. So that's where we need our patience to be at an end.
Strategic patience.
That's right.
But so, it's ended.
Oh, thank God. Thank God.
We don't have patience anymore.
That's right. So now I thought Obama was far too patient. I thought he should have put more pressure on the Chinese. Now, the Trump team is saying that they are doing that. At the same time, Trump had a meeting with the Chinese leader, Xi Jinping. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, it turns out it's more complicated than I realized. You got the quote, John?
After listening for 10 minutes, well, the guy talked for 10 minutes. We don't know how long Trump actually listened. I realized it's not so easy. It's not what you would think.
Who thought North Korea was going to be easy? He's such a schmuck.
There's a quote from the 80s where he talked about why he should be in charge of nuclear diplomacy. He said, I could learn in an hour everything you need to learn about nuclear weapons, and then I could put pressure on the Russians to get rid of their nukes. So he has not evolved from that position for 30 years.
But think about that. He said, I can get ready on nuclear weapons in an hour. Well, why didn't you take that hour before you met with the leader of China?
He couldn't fit it in the last 3 decades.
Where he had to basically do a 10-minute seminar for you on what's going on. And you can't trust a Chinese leader to tell you what the reality is. He's going to tell you the Chinese perspective. You are so monumentally stupid.
But a good deal maker, after all. Back in the 80s, he said it would take him 60 minutes to learn about nukes. And he was able to negotiate that down to 10 minutes with the Chinese.
So, now, one of the top nuclear experts in the country told the New York Times that this is a Cuban missile crisis in slow motion. Now, if you were going to apply diplomatic pressure on China and you were going to start negotiating, and to be fair to the Trump team, they have in some ways very ham-handed publicly when it should be done privately, but talked about, hey, maybe I don't call you a currency manipulator with all of the trade ramifications if you help me with North Korea. Okay, now we're getting somewhere that is actually diplomacy, pressure, our strategic patience coming to an end, that could be done in a positive way. So, hey, I'm keeping an open mind here. But if you got a Cuban Missile Crisis and instead of JFK, you got a knucklehead like Donald Trump and his number one concern is his own ego.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And has talked about how badly he wants to use nukes and says, why are we going to have them if we don't get to use them?
Man, if I'm in South Korea or Japan today, I am incredibly nervous.
Yeah, especially came out today, a senior North Korean official said that the U.S. had created a, quote, dangerous situation in which a thermonuclear war may break out at any minute. And there's going to be opportunities for it because that weapons test that failed in a cartoon fashion, they have promised that they're going to have weekly tests of that sort. Might get embarrassing if they keep failing like that, but they are going to try it. And the most recent update is that China and Russia have launched intelligence gathering vessels to follow the USS Carl Vinson aircraft carrier and its support ships as it travels towards the Korean Peninsula. So they're going to be around in case anything happens. Now, we've been talking about bombings, though. We had the bombing in Syria with the Moab in Afghanistan. We have a potential bombing here as well. Why don't we bring up a poll we want you guys to weigh in on. If you could bring up graphic 13, where is Trump going to bomb next? And you can choose more than one. So we've got a wide array of targets there. Russia, Yemen, Iran, Mexico, North Korea, each its own unique sort of disaster were he to do it. But you can vote by going to trtnetwork.com/bomb.
So that changes daily for me, and it depends on what we mean by bombing, right? So I was worried last week that it was going to be some sort of conflict with the Russians, obviously because of Syria. I don't think he's going to bomb Russia. That would be crazy. Now I'm worried it's North Korea. Next week it might be some other country.
Yeah.
And by the way, we allow the Saudis to bomb in Yemen all the time, and from time to time we do it. It's funny, some bombings don't count. When we bomb in Syria and we kill a lot of civilians, as long as we're not bombing Assad, somehow it doesn't count. But when we bomb Assad, wait a minute, we have bombed Syria.
Or if you send in troops and they kill a couple dozen civilians, that doesn't count either.
In Yemen, yeah, exactly right. So I guess today I would vote North Korea, but God, I hope I'm not right about that. God, I hope I'm not right. Okay, so but Yemen might be a perpetual winner.
I would say Mexico. We had that Trump-loving sheriff saying the Moab is designed for use against the cartels in Mexico. If he got that tweet, if he retweets it, duck.
Oh boy, tytnetwork.com/bomb. Okay, two more quick things about North Korea. One's another poll. So in the midst of talking to the Chinese leader, Xi Jinping, about North Korea, Trump found out that it's actually a little bit more complicated than you would imagine. He said, after listening for 10 minutes, I realized it's not so easy. It's not what you would think. I can't describe to you how unbelievable that quote is. Which child thought North Korea would be simple? That you would go and be like, oh, North Korea, there's been an armistice for 64 years. It's been led by a family of dictators for that same amount of time. They have all these missiles buried in the mountains, ready to go, some nuclear, some non-nuclear, which they can launch at a minute's notice. They can pulverize Seoul, South Korea, let alone Japan, kill millions of people. But you thought it was going to be simple, you schmuck? God, and then he talks to the Chinese leader and he's like, oh man, the Chinese seem to know this a little bit. Why didn't you get an intelligence briefing before you talked to the Chinese leader? He's so dumb.
What do you think the Chinese leader thinks of Donald Trump right now?
Oh my.
I had to teach this moron about one of the biggest potential foreign policy disasters in the world right now. And that was the first time I met him.
And afterwards he said, oh man, I didn't know this was going to be that hard. Oh my God, if I'm a foreign leader, I'm almost embarrassed for us. Like, oh, I guess I could take advantage of you because you're so stupid, but I feel bad doing it. It's like taking advantage of a person who's a little slow or a lot slow. So, which reminded me of another quote from a couple of weeks ago when he said about healthcare this.
Now, I have to tell you, it's an unbelievably complex subject. Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated.
I don't know. Everybody in the world knew.
It took Obama all that time to do it. To get rid of the to keep the pre-existing condition clause, but to get rid of the rest of it. Of course it's complicated, you moron. Nobody knew. Nobody knew it was complicated. He is a child. And look, you forget how dumb Bush was, and he was, believe me, he was a grade A moron, okay? But this guy might have topped him. So I want to go back to an old poll we have on the Young Turks here, tytnetwork.com/dumb. Who is dumber, George W. Bush or Donald Trump? And it is not an easy contest. I always play random Bush quotes.
Budget man.
He called his budget director the budget man.
And I make a lot of big ones, and I make a lot of little ones.
Spent a little time with the CIA man this morning, keep catching up on the events of the world.
Wow. Okay. How do you put food on your children?
Okay, so it's not easy, but I barely voted for Trump last time. I'm voting more vigorously for Trump this time.
Me too.
Because I think that George W. Bush had a better inclination of what he didn't know. Mm-hmm. Like, he knew that Jeb Bush was smarter. He knew that his dad was smarter, and he was kind of bitter about it. He knew the Ivy League guys were smarter and was kind of bitter about it, even though he went to Ivy League. Mm-hmm. But he knew he didn't really get into the Ivy League, right? Trump, I think, thinks he did get into the Ivy League. Mm. That his dad didn't pull strings to get him out of Fordham with his miserable grades and get him into Penn. Yeah. Right? Like George Bush was, as in the famous words of Governor Ann Richards, who ran against him back in the day, said, he was born on third base and thought he hit a triple. Yeah. But he had an inkling that he didn't really hit that triple, right?
And so Trump, some smart people.
Trump was born on third base and thought he hit a grand slam.
Yeah.
And he absolutely believes it. He has no idea how stupid he is.
And also, I think George W. Bush couldn't have done any better. That's the limit of his abilities. I think that if Trump wasn't so incurious and so hostile to learning, if he were to actually try, he could be smarter. And so he's both dumb and lazy, so screw him.
Yeah, tytnetwork.com/dumb. But we report, you decide. All right, one super last thing on North Korea. Okay, here's what I'd like to ask about the showdown we have in North Korea here, which is deeply worrisome. Where the fuck is the CIA? So now, look, credit where credit is due. We've done some cyber warfare there. We believe, we think, and it should be kept secret. I'm not arguing against that. And now the North Korean missiles are failing at a greater rate, including the one that just happened. Great. I don't know if that's the NSA, the CIA, or the Pentagon. Okay, so I will give them credit on that. But I'm now in the knee deep in reading a book about all the coups and assassinations the CIA did of democratically elected governments across the world. So whether it was Mossadegh in Iran, whether it was the leader of Guatemala, because we would like bananas a little cheaper. Whether it was, I mean, literally dozens of Latin American and African leaders, and if the more democratically elected they were, the more they represented their people, the more likely we were to assassinate them or to execute a coup against them and take them from power. But when we have a dictator in North Korea, for 64 years we've had a madman, whether it was his grandfather, his father, or now Kim Jong-un. We can't, all of a sudden we can't do a coup of our life dependent on it. We can't find a way to get rid of a dictator. When it's a democratically elected guy, gone in a matter of minutes. Wait, you don't want to sell oil to us at the price that we want, Iran? You think you're going to have democracy? No, your guy is gone. You're going to increase the price of bananas by a penny? You're gone, right? But we got a madman sitting in North Korea building nukes. They've done 5 tests of nukes that actually work. And CIA, all of a sudden they couldn't do a coup if their life depended on it.
Maybe the myths of his godhood aren't exaggerated.
Or maybe the myths of CIA's power might be greatly exaggerated at this point. Mm-hmm. I think in the past that they were very powerful. I think now they're largely a bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. And second of all, what is greatly exaggerated is that the CIA works for America. No, they work for multinational corporations. And if there is a profit to be made, you will be removed from power. But if it's just American interests or South Korean citizens or Japanese citizens, well, maybe we'll get to it and maybe we won't.
Yeah. I have very different feelings about it. It's also the possibility that the policy of targeted assassinations was moved away because if you had tried to kill him and failed, that could start a nuclear war. Maybe. Yeah. I mean, it's complicated. It is. Complicated.
Nobody knew it was going to be this complicated.
Nobody knew. Nobody thought because they didn't think.
No, John, to be fair, I totally agree with you. It is enormously complicated. I'm not saying.
And it's the most closed off culture and system, perhaps in world history.
I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying that putting a bullet in his head without doing the hard work of making sure the people or the government that replaces him would be on our side is a simple or decision to execute, if you will. Okay. But what I am saying is when there was money to be made, mm-hmm. it was equally complicated in Iran. It was equally complicated in Guatemala. It really was. Do you know how hard it was to get Mossadegh out of government? Organize all these organic protests against them. Mm-hmm. Then you had to arm them. Then you had to convince him not to put his own people in the streets. I mean, you can go on and on at the layers of incredible complexity to remove Mossadegh and to pretend that it was his, he was the problem. Mm-hmm. And to get propaganda all across the world in all the Western papers and have the New York Times go, oh, Mossadegh's the problem, democracy sucks, right? Thanks, New York Times and mainstream media. Now, I know that's 1953, okay? Yeah. So I'm saying, when properly motivated, the CIA seems to be able to perform miracles. But apparently world security and US security, not as good a motivation.
I think that this is an incredibly interesting conversation to have that we unfortunately don't have time for.
Agreed. We're going on the next thing.
I would love to talk for an hour about it. The next thing, unfortunately, is going to be our first break.
It is.
When we come back, we're going to have just a little bit of fun with Easter at the White House, and then we have the results of the incredibly important and kind of scary referendum that just happened in Turkey. We're going to have all that when we come back from this break.
Go. You know, for all the dumb things George W. Bush has ever said, I'm not sure anything's ever been said that's dumber than, they asked if Donald Trump is an intellectual person. Trust me, I'm like a smart person.
In that voice.
Who says trust me?
I'm like
a smart person. Ah! All right, anyway.
He's not. He's not even like
okay.
a smart person.
Yeah, that's the funny part.
I know some smart people. He's not like them.
Jay writes in on hashtag TYT Live, hopefully Dennis Rodman can get Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump in a room together and say, you're rich because of your dad and grandpa too. I hadn't thought of that connection. That's a good point.
I forgot about that.
They're both born on third base and might start a war together. Okay. Then we've got the super chats on YouTube, which I enjoy. The story of Ameno writes, just hashtag too strong. I like it a lot. T. Roberts Design says, without you, there would be no TYT chat, TYT. And then a smiley face with hearts as eyes. I enjoyed that as well. Thank you. And then J.R. McLaughlin writes, when I saw that my representative, who represents Concord, Massachusetts, the home of the American Revolution, didn't support Medicare for all, I finally realized that everyone needs to act. Wolf-pack.com, I'm joining. That's awesome. I love it. And then Myotis wrote about how Common Cause is fighting Wolfpack so hard in TYT. It must mean that they are worried. I believe you are right, and they should be worried. Okay, and let's go to donors real quick. Donors for the TYTnetwork.com/go campaign. $15 from Teresa Ann in Washington. Thank you, Teresa Ann. $50 from Kenneth in California, and $127 from Michael in Massachusetts. You guys are awesome. Much love. Okay, John, what's next?
With that, let's have a little fun with Easter. If you thought that Donald Trump would be able to get through something as simple as an Easter egg roll without making a fool of himself, then you probably have not been paying attention the past couple of years. First, the man was on location at the Easter egg hunt, surrounded by kids who were all very enthusiastic about being there. And he's handed a hat from a kid to sign, and look at how he handles that situation.
Can you sign my hat? Thank you.
Thank you.
They got kids here.
Hopefully it can. Who's that?
I got it.
There was so many.
Fool me once.
So many fun parts of that video. The first is, can you please sign my hat? Yeah, except I'll throw it away.
There's your hat. Go chase it, you runt.
And then they had him a second hat, because obviously, hey, schmuck, you just threw the kid's hat away. He wanted you to sign it. And I'm waiting to see what he's going to do with the second hat. Has he learned anything?
I wasn't sure either.
Right? Yeah. And he's like, was there going to be a little bit of self-acknowledgement? Like, oh, I shouldn't have thrown the hat away. Right, they handed me the second one. Okay, here you go, kid. Thanks for asking. He's like, no, I'm throwing this one away too. And then my favorite part is, after all that, he's like, whose hat is it?
Maybe ask that question before you huck it. Have you considered that?
Oh, what a goofball, man.
It's because there's no conscious thought. He is simply...
He's a child.
He's an orange robot going through his day. He's not thinking at all about what he's doing.
Yeah. No, he's
Joffrey.
It's
a human. I try to have a human moment with you, and you toss it over. You're not even looking at the kids.
Whose hat?
Whose hat? Anybody's now. Anybody's hat.
Before I saw that video, last night I sent a tweet about the four pillars of Donald Trump. And one of them was the inability and the lack of inclination to think just one step ahead. Yeah. But I overstated it. He thinks one step backwards. Yeah. After he throws it, he's like, whose hat?
No, there's every reason to believe that within a week or two, he's going to launch a missile and then say, whose missile?
Whose missile?
I don't know.
Nobody could have known that signing hats was this complicated. Yeah.
Okay, look, I often point out that Donald Trump doesn't pay attention, doesn't think very much, and maybe you think that I'm being unfair, but we have a little bit more evidence of it. So as they're about to start up the festivities at the Easter egg hunt, they start to play a song that you might recognize that has an associated patriotic motion you might recognize. Let's take a look at how he handled that complex situation. JR.
That's awesome. All right, legendary producer JR Jackson is the one that put that in slow motion. The nudge scene around the world. Yeah. These are the guys who are like, oh, we're going to put America first, going to make America great again. Look at these. And you remember how they used to criticize Obama for not having a flag on his lapel? And so when your foreign-born wife, which there's nothing wrong with that, I'm foreign-born,
<There's nothing wrong.
laughs> has to give you this when you're president. I'm very patriotic.
I love the country. Yeah. That's what I love. I love countries. This one specifically.
Okay. And even the kid knows to do it because he's more of a child than his son.
Like I said, in the zoomed in version, I said he's the third most presidential person on that stage.
I would argue fifth.
Fifth now. I didn't see the rabbit at first. And I believe there was a screenshot of that of him being reminded, and Ben Mankiewicz tweeted, that was the moment Donald Trump became presidential. Everything is the moment. Anyway, he's just a thoughtless, brainless, ego-driven sack. That's all he is.
Yeah. So, by the way, we don't actually care whether for a second or not he had his hand over his heart. We're just pointing out the hypocrisy of the Republicans who love to make giant deals out of situations like that, unless, of course, it comes to one of their own.
Yeah.
And let us also note for the record that Easter bunnies are the scariest of all holiday creatures.
Yeah, that thing is horrifying. It's just, I don't want eggs. I don't want to eat that thing's eggs. I don't know what it'll do to me. Might treat me like a bear. Okay, let's move on to slightly more serious consequential news. The Turkish referendum to drastically reconfigure their government and give additional powers to Erdogan, their current leader, has passed with 51.4% voting yes. And this is pre-certification. It'll take several weeks, 12 days to fully certify it, but we believe 51.4%, so it will go forward. And this is as opposition leaders inside of Turkey and international monitors are crying foul, saying that there are a number of problems with the way that the referendum voting actually happened. Now, importantly, the three biggest cities in Turkey, Ankara, Istanbul, and Izmir, all rejected the plans, voting from like 51.8% no up to into the 60s and 70s. And so those are the big population centers. And so it looks like it was overwhelmingly the more rural areas that voted in favor of giving Erdogan additional powers and changing how their government actually works. Now, opposition groups, as I said, vowed to challenge the outcome, citing a rule change to allow unstamped ballots announced after polls had already opened. Now, Erdogan's government says that those can still be verified in some fashion, but people are worried about the possibility of vote tampering with this change that happened after the voting actually occurred. And there's a number of other problems, including the fact that many opposition leaders are currently in jail, and so they were not able to rally people against this. Also, that government funds went to promoting the yes vote for the referendum, hugely outspending any opposition to it. And the fact that Erdogan has basically unlimited control over a large portion of the Turkish media, and thus they were overwhelmingly in favor of the referendum as well. The idea that you had a fair referendum vote in that situation seems somewhat complicated. And in one of the groups, the international monitoring groups that was on location for this, the Council of Europe delegation said in general, the referendum did not live up to their standards. In response to that, Erdogan had this to say, know your place, adding that he did not accept comments on the validity of the referendum vote.
Spoken like a true authoritarian. Okay, now, I think that there are varying levels of problems with this election. First, let me start with the least problematic. And in fact, I think there's a little bit of Western bias here. So One of the things that these European groups noted was that the involvement of Erdogan and other national and local public figures in the Yes campaign led to a restrictive and imbalanced campaign. But Trump's involved in pushing for legislation in America, and certainly European leaders are involved in Brexit, but in both for and against. Nobody calls that imbalanced.
Yeah, but he also locked up the people who might stand against
him. I'm going to come to that.
Okay. Okay.
So saying that it's imbalanced because a national leader is involved on one side, I think actually makes a mockery of the rest of your comments. I would have left that out completely.
What about the government funded promotional efforts for it? Like they took government money and put posters and advertisements and all that.
Right. I would be deeply against that, and that should be illegal. I don't know if it is illegal in Turkey, but it should be illegal.
Okay? I don't know that it is.
Right, and I don't know. Okay, number two, Angela Merkel says Turkish society is deeply divided because it only passed with 51.4%. Okay, but so is US society. In fact, less people voted for Trump than Hillary Clinton, and he became president anyway.
Yeah.
If the Turks did it or any non-Western nation did it, you would call that a farce and an absolute mockery of democracy.
Which is what I call our result.
That's right. So let's just keep it realistic. Now, if you think that I'm going to be on Erdogan's side, you are mistaken. So let's get worse and worse as we get along here. They said state media was biased in favor of Erdogan and did not adequately cover the opposition. Well, that is certainly true. And I think that's unfortunately the case in a lot of countries where state media is on the side of the government. Now, here in America, CNN is not state media, but is often very clearly on the side of the US government, and hence the rest of the world looks at CNN and goes, oh, that's US propaganda, and we're going to move forward. Mm-hmm. Now, what they don't do here or in a lot of other places, including in Europe, is imprison journalists or opposed to them.
Yeah.
So that gets to point number three, and that of course is completely unacceptable. You don't have a fair referendum. If you say, okay, John and I are gonna argue these two sides, I'm gonna argue yes, he's gonna argue no. But one quick thing, John's in jail. Okay.
Also, we cut his mic whenever he speaks.
Right, and 80% of the journalists who support John are also in jail. Mm-hmm. And somehow I got 80% of the media to be on my side. I can't quite tell how I did that. Yes, that would be monumentally unfair. And not really a democracy.
Yeah.
Just because you have a vote at the end doesn't mean that you have a functioning democracy. A functioning democracy also involves a functioning press and a functioning opposition. He did not imprison everybody who was against the vote. Not all the leaders, not all the journalists.
Yeah.
But plenty enough to certainly send a message to the rest of the media, hey, you better be on our side, otherwise the consequences can be dire. Now, yet it gets even worse. So monitors saw independent monitors saw that during some of the no protests, Erdogan wanted yes, okay? During the no protests, some of the cops would come in and just simply arrest the protesters.
Hmm.
Okay.
Well, we don't know how they would have voted.
Okay, well, it's hard to vote when you're in jail, and it's hard to get people to rally to your side if that means they're going to get imprisoned. And then senior officials in the yes camp, in Erdogan's camp, labeled the opposition terrorists. Yeah. I don't think this is a fair election.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not. But all of that actually pales in comparison. There's a lot of problems right there, giant, giant problems. All of that pales in comparison to, well, the ballots normally have to be stamped, but hours before the vote, I'm going to allow unstamped ones.
No, they announced it after the voting had already began.
Yes,
there
that's
was
even
no
worse.
Time for
that's
anyone right, to challenge
right.
it.
That's right. My bad. No, and not only that. You would announce it hours after the voting began if you look at the early results and go, uh-oh, this thing's going to go 55% the other way. No, who needs stamps on the ballots? We don't need stamps at all. No, you change the rules on whether your ballots are valid or not if you're losing. You don't risk doing that if you think you're going to win comfortably.
Yeah.
And you only change it in order to facilitate fraud. There is no other reason.
Yeah.
You don't all of a sudden in the middle of a vote and go, nah, we don't need to verify the vote, do we? Unless you're going to do fraud.
Yeah.
It's super obvious. So at the end of the day, it's not a real vote at all. Not because of some of this stuff that I said in the beginning, the Europeans complain about, but Erdogan's really strong in Turkey. Yeah, that's life. Trump's really strong in America, kind of. Right? Not so much these days. But in terms of, if you can commit fraud by now all of a sudden the ballots don't have to be stamped, well, then I have no confidence at all. No one should have any confidence at all that, in fact, the vote was even 51.4% yes. Very likely it wasn't. Very likely it was the opposite. That's why they had to change the rule in the middle so that they could do fraud.
Yeah.
That's not that complicated.
Yeah, the opposition wants a lot of the votes to be recounted. We'll see. We don't know that that recount would be any fair. But there's a couple of additional scary things to consider. Like, if you want a full breakdown of what this referendum would actually change, we did a video with Anna as well. We broke down all the changes. And it basically just gives a lot more power to the president, who will be Erdogan. He can rule until 2029. He basically has no check from the legislature, can interfere with what the judiciary does. Very scary. But in addition, he announced after the vote that they're enthusiastic about bringing back capital punishment, and the crowds are very favorable for that. And it was also this. This is from CNN. As the results came in, thousands of the president's supporters converged at the Ankara headquarters of the AKP, which Erdogan founded. Waving flags, they shouted, "Tell us to kill, we will kill. Tell us to die, we will die. Erdogan, Erdogan, Erdogan." That's about as scary as I can imagine.
That is not what that is not what Turkey used to be. So again, here a little bit mixed. So I'm totally against capital punishment because oftentimes the wrong person is killed. And yeah. I don't know why anybody would say, yeah, sign me up. I'm barbaric to kill the wrong guy, an innocent guy. And we know, for example, here in the US, 4% of people on death row were innocent. Hundreds have been exonerated from death row. We were going to murder the wrong people. You're really sure that in Turkey they've got to figure it out better? Okay, so I'm against capital punishment. But the European Union has been dangling membership in front of Turkey for as long as I can remember. They're never going to let you in. Turkey should have given up on that process a long time ago. So a lot of Turks who are secular like me will disagree with me and go, no, we need to be part of Europe and we don't want to be part of the Middle East, or we want to be part. Okay, I hear you, brother. I'd much rather be part of Europe. I much more agree with the rules and the culture in Europe. I hear you on all that. But Europe is never going to accept Turkey, never. They keep toying and toying and toying. Mm-hmm. So just be done with it. So just have the same values. You don't need to be officially part of Europe. Unfortunately, Erdogan and his followers don't have the same values. And that's the scary part.
Yeah, that was.
In my lifetime, there were not chants in Turkey when Turkey was a secular country of, we will kill if we
tell
want
us to kill, we will kill.
Tell us to die and we will die. No, that's fundamentalist Islam. And that is scary, and that's the kind of gross stuff that Erdogan has brought to Turkey and ruined the country with.
And then finally, so this is a huge amount of additional power being given to a man who has already shown that he is not responsible enough to wield it. And so what is the response from the US government to this next stage towards autocracy in Turkey? Donald Trump called him and congratulated him for the results of the referendum earlier today.
Well,
he's never met a dictator that he wasn't a fan of.
Yeah, peas in a pod.
Should probably take our second break. I don't know that we have much time to come back to, but
yes, we will.
Unless we just push forward, it's up to you.
Let's take the break real quick, and when we come back, we've got to do that story for you guys that we promised about Alex Jones playing a character. You'll love it. Come right back. All right, three quick tweets for you guys. There Will Be Wit says, waiting for Fox News outrage at this. After all, they hated on Obama for saluting while holding a coffee. Won't hold my breath. Great point. I had forgotten about that. Far Left says, what are the chances Trump's going to be angry at Melania for making him look dumb? Answer, very high. Enrique Rodriguez says, kid hands Trump a third hat. Can you please not throw this one, you moron?
He throws it in the crowd.
Yes. And donors from this hour, $11.14. I love how specific that is. That's from Rodrigo in California. $30 from Andrew in Georgia, and $50 from Nicholas in Singapore. You guys are awesome. Last story of this hour for you.
Okay. If you've been drawn in by the world of crazy conservative conspiracy theories, then you should understand that one of its leading voices has been playing you for a fool. Lawyers of Alex Jones says that he, in fact, doesn't believe any of this. He doesn't mean what he says. It's all been an act. And this came out during a court case to determine whether he was mentally fit to maintain custody over his children, with his ex-wife's lawyer saying he's not a stable person. Or sorry, this is actually his ex-wife. He's not a stable person. He says he wants to break Alec Baldwin's neck. He wants J-Lo to get raped. I'm concerned that he is engaging in felonious behavior, threatening a member of Congress, which we reported on a couple weeks ago. He broadcasts from home. The children are there watching him broadcast. In response, his lawyer said, that using InfoWars to judge Alex Jones would be like evaluating Jack Nicholson based on his interpretation of the Joker in Batman, saying he's playing a character, he is a performance artist.
Oh, well, I'm glad we now know exactly what
it's
Alex
Jones
is.
It's all fake. It is a false flag.
Look, I said this years ago. Alex Jones is the false flag operation. Mm-hmm. Okay, so because if you wanted to do some conspiracies, you know what you would do? You'd get pay a guy like Alex Jones to say everything's a conspiracy, mm-hmm. so that
make people believe it. Yeah.
So that when somebody says, "Hey, maybe that operation seems a little fishy," you go, "Oh yeah, you're one of those Alex Jones guys, right? Yeah. They think that Sandy Hook was a conspiracy. You think everything's a conspiracy. You think pizza's a conspiracy.
Oh, juice boxes make you gay."
Yeah. So if you wanted to do conspiracies, you would invent a guy like Alex Jones. Mm-hmm. To be a false flag operation so that you could discredit anyone who ever claimed any conspiracy actually happened.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's really the case, but what we do know now is that Alex Jones is a performance artist. Mm-hmm. So the performance artist formerly known as Alex Jones mm-hmm. has finally admitted who he is. And it's all a big joke, and it's a joke on you. And
it's a joke that could theoretically get people killed.
Yeah.
Because they walk into pizza places ready to shoot the place up because of his performance art.
That's right. And so this is exactly what I talked about after Andrew Breitbart passed away. Because sometimes people in Washington celebrate this, like they're good players in a game. And they said that about Breitbart when he died. Mm. They're like, oh man, he was such a character. And he was a fun player in this game. But it's not fun and it's not a game. Because sometimes a guy walks in with a gun to a pizza place.
Yeah.
And look, that's a small and obvious example. But sometimes when conservatives win, thousands of people die, or sometimes hundreds of thousands die in a war like Iraq. It's not a game, let alone encouraging Trump, kill the terrorists, kill their families. Who's terrorist, who's not, I don't know. Just turn the desert into glass, right? Yeah. And guess what's happened? We now know that we're killing hundreds of more civilians than we used to under the Obama administration because they've relaxed the rules and say, hey, bomb them. I can't tell who's a terrorist and who's not and who's their family member and who's not. It's not a goddamn game. It has deadly consequences when we're talking about politics and policy.
And it can also have personal consequences in the realm of potential child abuse, which is what this court case is really getting into. Especially when you listen to this quote from, I believe it was 2015, where Alex Jones is talking about his son, again, who watches the show as it's being filmed, and he is responsible for, saying, he is undoubtedly cut out for this, and I intend for him to eclipse what I've done. You're a good little knight who's going to grow up, I know, to be a great fighter against the enemy. So let's say that Alex Jones' cowardly defense there, that this is all performance art and you can't trust anything he says, again, telling all of his viewers he's been fucking with you this whole time, is true. Okay, fine. Maybe a 27-year-old can figure out that this is performance art. Do you think that a 12-year-old kid knows the difference, or a 10-year-old, or an 8-year-old? When you say that Sandy Hook is all fake, and the grieving moms have all made it up, and frogs are turning gay because of the water, and all of that. That's all seeping into young minds inside of his home. Forget about YouTube. And that's dangerous too. Although at the end of the day, we don't necessarily know what to believe because we also have this. Referencing the thing with his kid, Kelly Jones' attorney said this is the world he has planned for his kids. He went on to quote Mr. Jones at a recent hearing in which he swore that what he says on air is what he actually believes and not a character as the host's attorney claimed. So this is supposedly a guy who tells it like it is and sticks to his principles. And depending on who's suing him at any particular time, it's all true and I mean every word of it. Or if necessary, I'm a clown and I don't believe any of this stuff. And he flips flops back and forth. But in all of this, the people who are losing out are his viewers. The people who believe him and trust him. Who now believe crazy things about the world and are ill-equipped to deal with an incredibly serious world that we have right now.
So, slight defense of Alex Jones here, believe it or not.
Weird.
Is that I hate that it's all coming out in a child custody battle. Now, my wife's a therapist, and boy, divorces get ugly. Mm-hmm. They get super, super, super ugly. And a lot of what is said is absolutely true, and sometimes not so much. And in that same clip where he talked about how his son was going to turn into a good little knight fighting the enemy, it makes me uncomfortable, and he's 12 and
sounds
don't
like
do
a
that.
Christian fundamentalist.
Yeah. But at the same time, He says over and over how much he loves his son, and I believe him, you know. And
yeah, so, I think the people that raise their kids to become violent religious extremists love their kids too on some level.
Yeah, and it's just, then we get into parenting. Look, there's extreme cases like Bill O'Reilly, and in his divorce proceedings, his daughter said basically he was an absentee father, hadn't seen him in over a decade. Not literally never seen him, but not there to parent, etc. And O'Reilly goes on TV and tells people, oh, black people are a problem because where are the fathers?
Yeah.
Don't say where are the fathers if your daughter says in a divorce proceeding that she hasn't, you know, basically haven't seen you in over a decade. In this case, though, there doesn't seem to be statements, and I don't know all the nitty gritty of the divorce settlement and the child custody and all that stuff, that Alex Jones doesn't love his kids or neglects them or anything like that. So then how he loves his kids and what he teaches them, then we're getting too knee deep in how he parents. And that makes me uncomfortable, okay? So I'm just—
That's fine, it's a discussion to be had. I know some people think it doesn't matter. I get uncomfortable with the idea of like white supremacists, what they're teaching their kids, members of the Ku Klux Klan, what they're exposing their kids to. They get to do it, I guess. It's a free world, freedom of speech, but I can criticize it if I want to.
I hear you, but for me, I think that is the least relevant part of this, and that's between Kelly Jones and Alex Jones and their kids. But the relevant part to me is, just like Glenn Beck said he was a rodeo clown, here is Alex Jones, through his attorney, admitting, look, it's all a con job, right? It's all performance art.
I just want to sell those penis pills, and I need people's eyes to sell them.
Yeah, and so I just can't pump people up and get them to believe, come on, you really think I think that Sandy Hook was a conspiracy? Yeah. And the kids never died, and the parents are all lying. Who could be that monstrously stupid and such a terrible person? It's obviously like Jack Nicholson playing the Joker in Batman. I'm playing the Joker as a talk show host.
I love that that's the comparison his lawyer made.
That's right. That's not her lawyer. That's his lawyer. So the great irony of this is the guy who claims everything is staged has just admitted that his own show is staged.
Yeah. Sad.
Sad.
Baby.
Baby.
That's the fight. That's the key. That's everything.
Wait, okay. What's fake? That's everything. Oh, God.
All right, guys. Thank you, John. Everybody check out youtube.com/thinktank. We've got an amazing hour coming up for you guys, including now the left wing and the right wing have started to get into fisticuffs. Actual fights breaking out and vegetables being sold in between. We will explain.